I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Margaret Moore Booker. She is author of the new book, Southwest Art Defined, an Illustrated Guide. And on Thursday of this week at 6 o'clock, she will be speaking at Collected Works Bookstore and will be joined by some artists whose work is featured in some ways in this book. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me.
Now, this is a big category, Southwest art, both in time and in the geographical area that it covers.
Yes, absolutely. But that was the important thing for me, is to get all of the arts within that region in this book.
So we're talking about New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, Colorado.
Yes.
And so what was the motivation for you to put together this book?
Well, I really felt there was a need for it in my own projects, in my own writing projects. I wanted a book like that so I could look things up, quickly, and I wanted a good source. And I found that, I was looking in 20 different books to get a decent definition for a particular technique or material or art form that was made in the Southwest. So I just kind of went from there. And then when I kind of chatted with people in the field, gallery owners, museum curators, and various publishers, and everyone said that would be awesome because there isn't anything like that out there, So I wanted to get both Hispano and Native American arts and architecture, of the region in there.
And it's so tricky when you talk about what cultural categories you're going to put in the book, because there's so much cultural mixing that's happened over the millennia that your book covers.
Absolutely, and that's really tricky. And the other thing is that there's all this crossover, within techniques and materials and art forms within the various cultures that have lived here, over the centuries. For instance, I have a term for pinyon pitch, and it was used by early, I would say prehistoric and historic weavers, native weavers, to coat the inside and outside of their hand-woven baskets to make them watertight. Well, pinyon pitch was also used by the Navajos on their pottery, again, originally to make it watertight, and now they still use it, but it's more of a decorative feature. And then also Hispano artisans, Santeros, have used pinyon pitch as kind of the last varnish on their retablos. So I think that's, really interesting. There's that crossover of the cultures, and it's a natural material, traditional material that a lot of them are still using.
So that's one of the things about this, and one of the nice things when you kind of flip through this book, it's sort of alphabetical from Akuma to Zuni, kind of.
pretty much, yeah.
But the materials really figure heavily in it, and I think one of the common threads in this book is the use of natural materials and as you gave with that example of pinyon pitch, the very creative use of natural materials.
Yeah, absolutely, because as an art historian and a collector, it's a particular interest of mine. If I have a piece of basketry or pottery that I either purchased or just admire at a museum collection, I want to know, how it was made. And I wanted to include all the different materials, from the plants, yucca to clay, and as I said, pinyon pitch. And then I researched them all and discovered how they were used. And that was one of the interesting things, too, is that, we look at these works of art and think, we don't understand, I think, the labor that goes into them. For instance, basketry, native basket makers, have to pick their own materials, and they can only do it a certain time of year. And then they have to dry it, and then they have to wet it again so it's pliable, and then they might dye it, and then they have to split, if it's a leaf or, a stalk of yucca, they have to split it into little sewing elements. And then just the process itself of weaving takes a long time. So it was just, again, really fascinating to go through that whole process, with them in a way, discover the materials and then bring it all the way up to the techniques they use to make the pieces and design elements and that kind of thing.
For you as you say, a collector and an art historian, that kind of understanding of materials and processes gives you such an insight into how the work is made and the quality of any particular piece when you start looking at the details of that use of materials.
Yeah, that's true. I do have a long background in art history and have studied the arts of this region for probably 15 years or so on my own. And then when it came to working on this book, I did consult a lot of published sources and scholars in the field and artists themselves. But yeah, I'd say my husband and I have developed a good eye over the year, you know, because we've just looked at so much material out there and so many, you know, works of art and traveled, you know, to the Hopi Mesas and gone to the Spanish Market and India Market every year for, I don't know, 15 years. And
And you, I would think, also have a very good eye for authentic versus copy kind of work.
Yes. I mean, that's unfortunate because, for instance, with basketry, there are a lot of fakes out there. And we have a pretty good eye for that, definitely.
How can you spot a fake in some of the different kinds of Southwestern art that you work with?
Oh, gosh. It'd be hard to do that without having them physically in front of me to show you. But usually it's going to be, you can see a lack of skill and the materials just aren't quite right. You know, you can tell the dye is just a strange color in a basket or, it's actually tricky. It's definitely tricky.
What are some of the other natural materials that we use here in the Southwest and that Native people and Hispanos and everybody else has been using over the centuries?
Oh, gosh, there are so many. And used for all different things from architecture, you know, mud, of course, for architecture. And mud is also used for one of my favorite art forms. They're called mud toys, and they're made by Navajo women, and they're literally just mud that's formed usually into a figure, and then it's dried in the sun and then painted, and that's it. And they're just charming little works of art. So there's mud, there's the yucca plant for weaving, wool, of course, for textiles.
There was a part in your book where you have an entry on tree ring dating, and I thought, why does she have tree ring dating in a book on Southwestern art? It's because of the Vigas.
Exactly. It's one way to date a historic structure is they take a little sample of the Viga wood and they can date it by this process. And because I'm also extremely interested in architecture, I wanted to have as many terms in the book relating to architecture as I could.
Yeah.
So that's why that's in there, yeah.
And there's entries in the book. I mean, again, it's full of lots of nice little surprises, and one of them was bungalow.
Yes, again, that's a favorite architectural style of mine, and there are a lot of really wonderful examples in Santa Fe, for instance, and in Tucson and elsewhere in the Southwest. And so I included it, and I tried to, you know, mention that the style is adapted in some regards, you know, regionally. So, for instance, sometimes the bungalows actually have walls of adobe or stucco that might be a little different than you'd see elsewhere in the country.
And the thing about the bungalow entry that was interesting to me is that the form of it was designed for very hot climates because it kept the heat out and let the air flow through in a way that kept people from baking in the summers. And there's a lot of things like that where kind of low-tech technologies for staying sane in this climate, whether it be hot or cold, are in there without all of our modern technological achievements.
Right. I guess with the bungalows also, you're thinking of the porches, you know, these very expansive porches and sleeping rooms, and then, sleeping rooms that are partly outdoors. In Arizona, they call it the Arizona room. It's a porch basically enclosed, but lets the breezes come through and cool you down at night and that kind of thing.
So let's talk about your own journey in collecting. We're talking to Margaret Moore Booker about her book, Southwest Art Defined. Now, how did you start collecting Southwestern art?
Well, I came out here in the early 90s, and I went to a trading post, and I saw this incredible pot, a tiny little black-on-black Santa Clara pot, and I was just amazed by it. It was, you know, and when I learned the history behind it and the techniques involved in it, I had to have it, and I wanted to investigate it further, and I went to Santa Clara Pueblo and chatted with artisans there and learned more about the piece. But so it was that trip out here. I was on my own and just fell in love with this piece. And then my husband came back with me on subsequent trips, and he bought his first little pot at San Ildefonso, and he was hooked. And we just kind of carried on from there. And he got into basketry, and then I got into textiles and jewelry, and it just went on from there.
So with the pottery that you bought, the first little piece at Santa Clara, which there's a beautiful photograph of in the book, there is this whole world of pottery that was really made not so much for utilitarian use, carrying things, carrying water, whatever, but really for sale, for the market.
Yeah, I'd say beginning in the late 19th century, the potters started making pottery specifically for sale. And they, you know, would use specific patterns forms that they found were appealing to tourists. And so they did kind of change their art to appeal to the public, because they needed to make a living. But they also still use traditional techniques, and you know, the designs, too, are also traditional. So, they did kind of change what was a functional item into a tourist item, but then ultimately also a work of art.
So in your journey of collecting and writing this book, did you get to kind of go behind the scenes and see how, for example, Chimayo textiles were made, or Santa Clara pots, or other kinds of baskets or things that you cover in this book?
Yes, absolutely. On various trips around the Southwest, sometimes we would attend artist demonstrations. For instance, we were in Tucson around the time they had a fair, and we were able to watch Tohono O'odham basket weavers make willow and devil's claw baskets. So sometimes it was just good timing, but other times we sought out specific artists. We were at the Hopi Mesas, and we sought out Dexter Nampeo, who's a fairly well-known artist, potter. And she didn't have any pieces because she's so famous you pretty much have to get your name on a list.
Oh, my goodness.
But she was just wonderful because she took the time to tell us about the process, and she took us out back to her studio, which was basically a shed, and showed us how she uses the traditional technique in firing her pottery. And it was really quite funny because she was adamant about the type of sheep manure that she used for fuel. Not just any sheep manure. It had to be picked up in the field a certain time of year, and it had to be a certain type of, it had to be a certain thickness and I would say firmness. And it was really quite interesting. And so we have, my husband and I have wonderful stories about, you know, meeting the different artists, and they're telling us these techniques.
That's so interesting because, I mean, these are the, really, these are the kind of chemists and physicists of Native arts.
Right, right. That's true.
Now, tell us some of the other places that you visited and people you met.
We've been to the Navajo Reservation quite a few times, and we tracked down a basket maker named Sally Black. And we just happened to arrive when she was working on a basket that shows, it's a pictorial basket that shows the coyote, who was a trickster, basically creating the stars in the heavens. And my husband just fell in love with it right away. But what was cool is she was working on it, and she was splitting the yucca leaves into the, you know, really thin strips that she could use for sewing and or weaving. And we noticed that she had a gold tooth in her front, you know. And she said, yeah, because she'd been splitting those yucca leaves for so long that it wore down her tooth. So
oh, my goodness.
She had to get a gold tooth to cap, you know. And anyway, it was kind of funny.
We're talking to Margaret Moore Booker about her book, Southwest Art Defined. So tell us about the process of writing this book. I mean, it's kind of, I don't know if we want to call it encyclopedic, but it's a kind of A to Z, very beautifully illustrated with fantastic photographs. And you must have, I mean, it must have been on some level of a big and somewhat collaborative project.
Yes, it was definitely collaborative. I did the initial research, you know, searching out scholarly articles and books on the subjects. And then I spoke to artisans, and I contacted various scholars in the field, and I attended as many museum exhibitions as I could. And so I pulled the text together, and then at the very end we sent it out to different specialists in the field. For instance, Jonathan Batkin at the Wheelwright Museum, Carmela Padilla in Santa Fe to read the Hispano entries. And it kind of opened up a whole dialogue between myself and scholars and artisans out there. And it turned out I did a pretty good job, but there were definitely some things they thought I needed to explore more, or a couple things that were not quite right. But in general, that was a really good collaborative process at the very end.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a vast sweep of topics that I guess no one person could really encompass all that knowledge.
Exactly. There's no way I could be a specialist in all these fields. I mean, as I said, I did my best with the research and talking to artists and incorporated my own knowledge, you know, from being out there and meeting with artists, but I really needed that expertise, you know, to have a look at the manuscript at the end.
Talk about the process of collecting. It's something that I've actually been interested in for a long time. It seems like collecting is almost genetic. I mean, there are kids who collected bottle caps in the old days. There are people who collect impressionist art. It doesn't matter how big the ticket is. It's like there's a kind of focus and almost obsession that collectors seem to have.
Yeah, and I think it starts with your being drawn, you know, to a particular art form. And then, you know, say with pottery, well, okay, I have my little piece of Santa Clara pottery, but now I want a piece of micaceous pottery made by, say, Felipe Ortega, who's a famous micaceous potter out here in New Mexico. I don't know, it becomes infectious, and it's almost like an addiction. You know, all of a sudden you want examples by other artists or other, you know, materials, or and you just get excited by it. And as an art historian, you know, I worked in art museums for a long time, and I got to handle wonderful objects. And there's nothing more thrilling in this world, at least for me, than holding in my hand a work of art that I know someone has labored over and, you know, has such a creative flair. And I don't know, it's just something really special, I think, for collectors.
And there's a kind of like, as you say, you have one piece and then you need to round out the collection. And the collection seems to be an illustration of some whole. I mean, whatever the scope of that area is that you are collecting within, it seems like there's a sense at a certain point, okay, we've completed this. Is that true?
Yeah, that is true. In fact, we've reached it. You also run out of space. That's another really big issue.
Right.
But I think you reach a point where you feel like you have beautiful examples of work that you wanted, and it, you know, brings you joy every day, and you know, you have it in various spots in your house. And I think my husband and I both feel like we have these beautiful examples and don't need to carry forward. However, having said that, we just were at the Indian Art Market in at the Heard Museum in Tucson, Arizona, and both of us succumbed. And I purchased a beautiful little pot by Goldenrod. And so, you know, it's really hard to stop. But I think you do, you know, reach a point where you feel like you do have a full collection. And Some of that might stem, too, from my museum days, you know, and you kind of want an example of this, this, and this. It's almost like having an exhibition in your house. And then you reach the point where you feel like you're done. You've got it. You've got everything you wanted, and you can just enjoy what you have and still go to the shows and maybe not purchase something, but it's hard.
Now, do you get together with other collectors? Are you kind of a network of people who talk to each other about what you're doing?
You know, we don't. There are certainly organizations and groups out there. I know the various museums have collectors groups, but we actually don't do that. We're, I don't know.
are collectors competitive with each other?
They definitely are competitive. Well, you probably know how at Indian Market, you know, you have to get there at 5 in the morning if you want to purchase a work by a specific, you know, well-known artist. So and I think now you have to put your name on a list and stand in line and so forth. And, oh, yeah, they're definitely. And how it goes is if you're at one of these shows, if you have the piece in your hand, then it's basically yours if you want it. So you don't put it down. If you're thinking about it, don't put it down because someone else will pick it up and say, it's mine now. So it's weird, but yes, there is definitely this competitiveness. We've experienced that, and it's a little weird, you know, but anyway.
Well, this book, Southwest Art Defined, I would think it would be something that would be very helpful not only to scholars and students, but to collectors.
Absolutely, yeah, because it has, as we've discussed, all the different techniques and materials and forms and designs in there. And so, yeah, I really saw it as a reference work for collectors, for museum staff, for librarians, for students, even writers, because that's how it started for me, and anyone interested in the Southwest. It is kind of like a dictionary, and it is alphabetical, but it really is a pleasure just to sit down with it and leaf through it because of the beautiful photographs and interesting technique. And I think Rio Nuevo published this, and they are out of Tucson, and I'm just so pleased with what they did. It just really came together beautifully. The organizing of the photographs was no small matter, and they did photograph quite a few things from our own collection, but then we also got photographs from museums and galleries and other private collectors. We tried to find examples that best illustrated whatever the term was, whether it was a fetish or a Cordova wood carving or textile.
Or a petroglyph.
Or a petroglyph or a bungalow or an adobe, you know, Spanish Pueblo revival style house.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you will be at Collected Works tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock, and you have some artists with you. Tell us about who's going to be joining you.
Yes, I'm really pleased to have four different artists who will demonstrate crafts that are illustrated or discussed, rather, in the book. We have Melvin Sandoval, who is a traditional fetish carver from San Felipe. He's also of Zuni Pueblo descent. We have Nicholas Otero, who's a New Mexican Santero, and he will demonstrate retablo making, again using traditional techniques. And we have Felipe Ortega, who's a potter here in New Mexico. He's of Apache and Hispano descent, and he will demonstrate his micaceous pottery. And we have Rachel Roybal Montoya. She's from born and bred in northern New Mexico, and she will demonstrate her filigree jewelry. And lastly, we will have David McElroy, who's actually a newcomer to Santa Fe. He's a member of the Choctaw Nation, and he's going to demonstrate silver work, in particular the repoussé technique. He's been heavily influenced by Navajo silver work, and so he will join us tomorrow.
Margaret Moore Booker is author of the book Southwest Art Defined, An Illustrated Guide. And once again, she will be at Collected Works Bookstore tomorrow, Thursday at 6 o'clock. And Collected Works Bookstore is on Galisteo Street on the corner of Water Street right here in Santa Fe. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.